Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spices new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're fresh off of UFC 322, which was awesome. It was such a blast. I was able to catch bits and pieces of it. A lot of it was through Twitter. Some of it I watched live. You know, I was out having a night Saturday night. I've been working these 6-day shifts. It's been unfortunate, but that's the corporate lifestyle. It's the busiest time of the year for my company, and I just have, like, no free time. Like, it's 8:20 right now. I have to go to bed at 10, 10:15, 10:30, be up at 5. I mean, it's a grind, but, you know, it's not going to stop us from at least dropping a little bit of an episode every single week. And today, we are going to be recapping UFC 322. We could talk about the NFL a bit, but I might just save that till, honestly, I'm out of this grind period. Once we get through, I'd say like the second or third week of December, I should probably be good to, you know, drop longer episodes, more in-depth episodes. But for now, you know, we're previewing UFC events, dropping NFL quick picks, and plus the Vikings lost, and my fantasy football teams are so mediocre this year. I'm not like a dominant force in any of my leagues this year like I used to be in the past. So on today's episode, we will be recapping UFC 322. We went 9-5. On predictions, which honestly isn't too bad, but I always like look back and I'm like, why did I pick that person? So we'll be going through it all, drop our predictions, or not predictions, our recap, and let you know what I thought of every fight and what I think is next for each and every fighter on the card. I'll say, since moving to Chicago, it is fun. It's a fun city, guys. Highly recommend. The nightlife is fun. Walking through the city during the day is fun. The food is great. You know, people always talk about, like, oh, the people are so mean. No, the people are great. The people I've ran into are absolutely amazing, and I've made so many new friends. So highly encourage you, if you have not visited Chicago, to take a visit to it. And there was actually a Chicago native who fought on this UFC 322 card. Did he win? Did he lose? I don't know. Well, we're going to talk about it in literally a second when we go through the card. So kicking off UFC 322, we had a little lightweight action between Matheus Camilo and Vyacheslav Borshev, and this just kind of made both guys look weak. I mean, it really did. Vyacheslav Borshev showing that he still has holes in his grappling. This was his last fight, definitely, in the UFC. He is getting cut, I can almost guarantee. 5 of 10 on takedowns for Matheus Camilo. Only manages 3 minutes and 22 seconds of control time, which just isn't that impressive. It's just not. And this was just a boring fight. And it consisted of Matheus just consistently shooting takedowns, landing them. Vyacheslav just never really uncorking it. I really felt like Vyacheslav could have put Matheus out of there. He had a couple moments where he wobbled him. He might have won the third round, but honestly, it just nothing was exciting here. So Vyacheslav Borshev will lose his third straight fight. He has just never really found success in the UFC. His record is now 8-7-1, and he will be cut from the UFC, is my official prediction. For Matheus Camilo, I mean, just not exciting. Not exciting. You know, he's 10-3, he's 1-1 in the UFC, so they'll definitely give him another shot. But in terms of the lightweight division, like, I don't know. He clearly can grapple, so do we test him against another grappler? Maybe. You know, that there's always an option there. Might just try and matchmake him with, do we know if Jonathan Pierce is still in the UFC? I think Jonathan Pierce would be a good fight next for Matheus Camilo, but, like, I kid you not, this was just Matheus landing takedowns. And significant strike-wise, Vyacheslav Borshev almost doubled him, 69 significant strikes to 39. In this case, grappling beat striking, and it was just kind of lame. But yeah, unfortunately, I did not predict this one correctly. This one kind of bummed me out. Just how it goes. I was riding Matheus Camilo all week, and then right before it, I'm like, you know what? Vyacheslav Borshev, he's going to win this, and he did not. But hey, it's okay. Good job to the Jaguar, Matheus Camilo. And he was the minus 175 favorite, so I should have known better. After that, we got into Bahsondjir Susukarev and Eric Maconko. And everyone's saying that Bahsondjir Susukarev is washed or something. All I see is a guy who is staying active, The kid's 24. He is now 2-0 in the UFC. He has fought in 3 times since August, and he just got another knockout. I mean, the people are saying, like, oh, he's not running through guys like Eric McConko. Like, Eric McConko's tough. Let's not act like Eric McConko isn't a tough guy. Round one, Bossinger relying on the grappling. 2 of 5 on takedowns, 2 minutes of control time. Eric outstriking him 17-13 significantly. Total strikes 52-36 in favor of Bossinger Susakarev. For Susakarev in the second round, McConko still outstriking him, still finding some success defending takedowns. McConko was looking good. We get into round three, and McConko is kind of gassed out. Bossinger realizes it, lands a nasty, nasty straight, sends him right to his face. Ref steps in. Amazing win. Amazing win for Bossinger Susakarev. The internet was hating, and I just didn't see it. I really didn't. If anything, I saw a guy who knew that he was in a close fight, and he went and put his opponent out in round number three. Super impressive. He's 11-0. All right, he can rest the rest of the year, come back maybe February, March, April, and he's ready to take over. He really is. He's the biggest favorite on the card, and he ended up being the victorious one, so that's all that matters. For Eric, he is going to be 1-2 in the UFC, but he got 3 UFC fights in during the year. His only losses, there was Sutner Zaboyev and Bossinger Susakarev. I will say, not the most impressive fight, but I think they'll give Eric another shot. There's always going to be someone out there for him to fight. I know Mansoor Abdul-Malik has a fight coming up with Antonio Tricoli at UFC 323. I'd maybe like the winner of that, to fight Eric McConko. Maybe even the loser of that could fight Eric McConko. But in terms of Bossinger Susakarev, he's on to bigger, better things. In terms of a specific middleweight I would maybe want to match make him with, It's kind of tough. And Dustin Stolfus has dropped 2 decisions in 2025. I think maybe Dustin Stolfus would be another good test for Bossinger Susakarev. So those are 2 names on who I think these guys should square off with next. You know, if you know UFC, you recognize those names. If you don't, you're probably like, oh, he's just picking random guys. But yeah, Bossinger Susakarev, keep his name on the register, okay? He's the best fighter to come out of this recent season of Dana White's Contender Series. He looks dominant. Next up, Fatima Klein dominating Angela Hill. Kind of make me sad. You know, Angela Hill at times is a good gatekeeper, and now I'm starting to see that, you know, maybe she's not that good. But she was ranked at number 12. Fatima Klein womanhandled her, I should say. And I believe Fatima Klein will enter the rankings at number 12 in the women's strawweight division. In terms of this fight, 115 significant strikes to 56, 152 total strikes to 65, 4-7 on takedowns for 5 minutes of control time. Anywhere this fight was, Fatima Klein was dominating. Kind of close. In round two, Angela Hill had, only 9 less significant strikes, defended 3 takedowns, but clear round one and two for Fatima Klein, and I'd even say that round one might have been a 10-8. Like, she was looking very good, looking very confident, and Fatima Klein, keep her name on the register now. She is now 3-1 in the UFC, went 3-0 in 2025. She's 9-1. This was her, if I can find my notes here, I guess she had lost Jasmine Jastavicius. So, third straight win, dominant stuff. She's ranked at number 12. She might be one of the biggest women risers of the year. And in terms of what's next, the top 10 opponent. If you ask me, I know Amanda Hemus is ranked at 11. That could be an option. I really like Jessica Andrade at 9. I think that's actually what I would probably go with, is Jessica Andrade at 9. I'm really, set my sights on that. So, big fights ahead for Fatima Klein. As for Angela Hill, Angela Hill is 40 years old. Like, she does not have to keep fighting. She doesn't. But if she does, there's always going to be a woman's strawweight for her to fight. Someone on the come up, someone for her to go to battle with, and, we'll just see who that ends up being. But she's had a good career. She is, unfortunately, I was hoping she'd get better, but she's 13-16 in the UFC. So she'll be going for fight number 30 next time out. So I'm going to hope they give her a layup. She is 18-16 professionally. If it was up to me, who would I have her fight? It's because she's going to have to fight down. That's the thing. In terms of, like, unranked women, I'm very unfamiliar with how many there are, like, specific names. So, a woman's strawweight that she could potentially square off with. Fatima Klein. Who has she been fighting recently? Elise Ardaline. Okay, Alice Ardaline. She's picked up 2 straight wins in 2025. 2 decision victories. She can fight Angela Hill. That is right. That's the next fight I've elected to because, well, why not? So, yeah, kind of just a one-sided fight. It was kind of whatever, if you ask me. Then one of the lamest fights I've ever seen, and just crazy that Chepe Mariscal has finally lost here. The man from Cicero, Illinois, the man I was referencing, has unfortunately lost. That is right. Pat Sabatini absolutely out grappling him to death. 7 of 12 on takedowns for 10 minutes and 37 seconds of control time. Just exhausting, dude. Oh my gosh. Just exhausting to watch. Round 1, 2 minutes, 39 seconds control time. Round 2, 3 minutes, 36 seconds control time. Round 5, 4 minutes, 22 seconds. Pat Sabatini, 12 significant strikes. Chepe, 7. I mean, just nothing really went down this. Chepe really showing a hole in his grappling here, so that really sucks. That really breaks my heart, him suffering a defeat here. I'll say that there are going to be other featherweights for him to fight out there. I'd certainly maybe throw him down against Jairson Brito. Jairson Brito just recently dealt with Pat Sabatini. He's also a good striker. He's fighting Melsik Bagdasarian, so if I'm assuming he runs through Melsik, we run that fight. But for Pat, somehow he's picked up 3 straight wins. 2-0 in 2025, 2 just grappling. Just, oh my gosh. So through 30 minutes of fighting, this dude has 24 minutes of control time across 2 fights in 2025, which is just ridiculous. Just super unnecessarily grapple-wise. So, Pat, maybe we give him another run at the rankings. He always seems to fail when we give him a shot. But, you know, David Onama just suffered a defeat. David Onama could use a little bounce-back win. Pat Sabatini deserves a ranked shot. Let's run that. Let's make that the next fight that we should do. But, I mean, good win for Pat. Just not entertaining whatsoever. Next up, impressive as ever, Kyle Daukaus. I can't believe he literally left the UFC and has come back 10 times better. Submits Jermier Sarge in 50 seconds. I mean, simple as that. Kyle Daukaus drops him, gets on top, locks in a darts choke, just like that. 50 freaking seconds. And I mean, Kyle Daukaus is known for his submissions. I mean, the kid coming in now, 6 straight wins, 12 subs, right? 14 of 17 victories finished by finish. And this is now 2 wins in the UFC between August and November here in under 50 seconds. A 50-second submission and a 43-second knockout. I don't know what happened when he left the UFC, but he has come back 10 times better, and I love it. I really do. I mean, domination here. I think his next opponent actually is going to be on this card, Roman Kopylov. I think that's the next matchup that you guys should keep your eyes out for. But in terms of Gerald Meerschaert, yeah, 4th straight loss. Hasn't won since August 2024. He is 37-21. We're trying to get him a victory. You really are. He has 2 more fights to reach 60, so I hope he keeps fighting. They don't get easier from here for Gerald Meerschaert if I beat Otis. Maybe we do Boston versus Sakai versus Gerald Meerschaert, because why not? But Kyle Daukaus, dude, he deserves a good opponent. I think Roman Kopylov, who we'll mention in a second, can be that opponent. But, I mean, great win. It's unfortunate there were far more dominant knockouts, more exciting knockouts on this card. Because had that not been the case, you easily would have seen him getting a performance bonus. So, great win for Kyle Daukaus after kind of having a rough start to his UFC career. He has come back, dominated, looked good, and I'm happy for him. Good win for Kyle Daukaus, plus we predicted it, which makes me even more happy. Then, next up, featherweight action, but these are between 2 bantamweights. This one shocking. This one really shocking. Malcolm Wellmaker humbled by Ethan Ewing stepping in on short notice. It was supposed to be a fight against Cody Haddon for Malcolm Wellmaker. Instead, he fights Ethan Ewing on short notice, and Ethan whoops him. Ethan beats him 29-28, 29-28, and 30-27 on the judges' scorecards. Round 1, the only real possible round for Malcolm, got taken down, but outstruck him by 9. Round 2, Ethan outstruck him 41-34. And round 3, outstruck him 32-22 and landed a crucial takedown in that round. And Ethan Ewing coming in here, he is 9-2. I believe he is, I don't know if it's the CFFC champion. He was a champion in bantamweight division in one other, you know, fighting promotion, but his nickname's the Professor Finesser, very odd nickname, but yeah, bantamweight division, look out, we're definitely going to give this dude a nice opponent up next. I mean, Malcolm Wellmaker was about to be the biggest, like, might have been rookie of the year, and right now, my rookie of the year, I don't even know, I really don't. Came in April, highlight reel knockout, came in June, highlight reel knockout. In round 1, we were kind of waiting for that highlight reel knockout, and just never happened, never came, so we'll see. I mean, I don't even know what to do with this guy. For Ethan Ewing, I see the potential there. I'm almost feeling maybe like a Ricky Simone. Ricky Simone might be a bit too high, if I'm being honest. I know Javed Bashrat lost to Ricky Simone. Let's run Javed Bashrat versus Ethan Ewing next. I really like that matchup. Another tough opponent. Ethan Ewing is clearly game, especially for whooping Malcolm Wellmaker. So let's make it. Let's make it happen. I like it. I love it. For Malcolm Wellmaker himself, I mean, just any unranked bantamweight, his just competition level is not going to increase. If anything, let's just have him fight Cody Haddon. It was originally slated to happen. But yeah, I did not really see this happening. Caught me off guard. I will say, out of all of my incorrect predictions on this card, this is the only shocker to me. The only shocker. Everything else, I was kind of like, you know, Mathus Kamilov, Vyacheslav Borisov, I knew better. I switched last second. Fatima Klein, Angela Hill, you know, relying too much on nostalgia, if you will. Nostalgia. Pat Sabatini, Chepe Riscoll, just really didn't think Chepe had that week of grappling. And then here for the Ethan Ewing fight. Just nuts. Just nuts. So, moving on from that, we had three more prelims. Aaron Blanchfield and Tracy Cortez. And I was actually leaning on Tracy Cortez all week, and then last second I was kind of like, you know what, Aaron Blanchfield, I feel like I'm kind of sleeping on. I feel like Aaron Blanchfield is actually far leagues better, and lo and behold, she dominated. She really did. You know, round one and kept it on the feet for Tracy Cortez. Okay, 42 significant strikes to 32 was looking good there, and then round two the grappling picked up. Tracy landed a takedown, and then, you know, Aaron Blanchfield reversed it, was able to land two of her own, was able to get her on the ground into this little like side control, was eventually able to lock in like a side control rear naked choke, and Aaron Blanchfield back in the finishing realm. I love it. Her first finish since February of 2023. Love it. Absolutely love it, Aaron Blanchfield. She looked good doing this, let me tell you. -235 favorite for a reason. Gets her fifth career submission. This is now two straight wins since losing to former title challenger Manon Fiora, which that loss has actually aged very, very well. She's a very impressive 8-1 in the UFC, and she was currently coming in. She was the number 9 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. I'd bump her up to number 8, maybe even number 7. In terms of the rankings, I'd move her up to 3. I really was. I think she deserves to have a number 3 spot in the rankings. So if it's up to me, Aaron Blanchfield, big fight coming up next. So she's not really ready for Valentina. That fight we'll talk about in a second is going to the number 2 ranked woman. I also don't feel like Aaron Blanchfield's in a weird spot. She's in a weird spot, but Macy Barber is taking on Karine Silva. Those two are supposed to fight in, I want to say it was May, yes. I can't wait till we do our end of the year review. That was the worst card of the year by far. UFC Vegas, what was it, like 109 or something? Oh, it was awful. It was completely terrible. And I just think the only real option is for her to fight the winner of Macy Barber and Karine Silva. So Macy Barber at number 5, Karine Silva at number 9. Winner can take on Aaron Blanchfield, who's going to either stay ranked at number 4, move up to number 3, but yeah, in terms of Tracy Cortez, she was ranked at number 8. Clearly too high a level of a fight. You know, there's going to be fighters for her to fight. Gabriela Fernandez, JJ Aldrich, Wang Kong. Really like maybe a Miranda Maverick rematch as well. Could be good fights there. But yeah, round 2, locks in the rear naked choke with 16 seconds left. It caught everyone kind of off guard, and we love finishes. We really do. So good stuff there. Next up, our second to last prelim of the evening, middleweight division, as Gregory Rodriguez takes on Roman Kopylov, and he picks up the unanimous decision victory. 30-27, 30-27, and 29-28. Gregory Rodriguez kind of just controlled this on the striking realm the entire fight. 90 significant strikes, 52. Roman was actually shooting takedowns, which is very unorthodox for him. And yeah, just kind of happened. Kind of was back and forth. Gregory always looking a step ahead. And hey, after starting the year getting knocked out by Jared Cannonier, he's followed it up with 2 wins. Win over Jack Hermanson, win over Roman Kopylov. He's already right back in the mix. Now, it's tough to give Gregory an opponent right now. We kind of need to see if Joe Pyfer gets someone, if Paulo Costa gets someone, if Marvin Vettori and Bruno Ferreira that follow to that fight. So just as an easy one here, Roman Dolidze is ranked number 12. Roman is in such a spot where he's going to fight someone of Gregory Rodriguez caliber. So that was what I would recommend there. For Roman Kopylov, I mean, Kyle Daukaus. Look, Roman Kopylov is pretty good. He's 14-5, 13 knockouts. Might actually be 12 knockouts. But you got to reward Kyle Daukaus. He's come in, knocked out Michelle Barra, submitted Jerome Rashard. He's knocked out a knockout guy and submitted a submission guy in both in under a minute, which is unheard of from a guy looking who we left the UFC, which is so average. So let's reward Kyle, give him Roman Kopylov, and it's a good bounce back fight for Roman Kopylov, who after going on a nice little 6-1 run with 5 knockouts, has since lost 2 fights in 2025. So we'll see who can bounce back from here. Gregory Rodriguez looking good, getting good stuff. And, you know, it's so funny. Gregory Rodriguez is only 33. Like, this guy looks so old. He's only 33. He's 5-1 in his last 6. And that one loss, Jared Cannonier. who, by the way, is ranked at number 10 in the world. So, decent fight, but it was from here that the card entered one of the most insane knockout streaks I've ever seen. I don't know if I'll ever get something as good as this. I think it may be the greatest knockout streak that I've ever seen, and I don't know if it's ever going to be topped, but let's talk about it because these four knockouts in a row were all amazing. And did they kind of, you know, go in any particular order? No, they were all amazing in their own unique right. So kicking us off here, Bo Nickel, Rodolfo Vieira, a really high-level guy for Bo Nickel. I mean, Bo Nickel, we saw him against Renier de Ritter, didn't go out. All right, didn't go well for him, kind of struggled, didn't really get it done. But here, he looked on point, landed two takedowns in round one, went for the submissions, outstruck him 28-7 significantly, defended two takedowns from Rodolfo, looking good. Round two, keeping it on the feet, landing hard shots, 38 significant strikes to 14, loving it, defended four takedowns from Rodolfo, and then halfway through the round, setting it up beautifully, lands a highlight reel knockout head kick. I mean, picture like an EA Sports UFC 5 head kick. Picture you're just playing against your boy, you just click the head kick button, hits him in the head, and he just falls flat backwards. I mean, oh my gosh, slumps Rodolfo Vieira. Oh my gosh, amazing. Amazing. What a way to bounce back for Bo Nickel. After starting out in May, getting a co-main event slot, not doing well. He was bumped from the main card on this card, and he was really advocate and vocal that, hey, I deserve to be on there. And after this knockout, yeah, you deserve to be there. 50K bonus, 7 of his 8 wins now by finish. And in terms of knockouts, like Bo Nickel, third knockout, amazing. Amazing knockout in the career of Bo Nickel. And this is going to put him right back up there with tough names, with guys he can compete against. Now, tricky to say against who. Like I said, middleweight division runs deep. Middleweight division runs very, very deep. But the last man to beat Rodolfo Vieira was Andre Petroski. The last man to beat Andre Petroski was Cam Rouston. Cam Rouston, I think, could be a very formidable opponent. But I also just don't know how highly they think of Bo Nickel. So I might go with Andre. I'm going to go Edmund Shahbazyan. Edmund Shahbazyan, a little three-fight winning streak for him in 2025. He's had a great bounce-back year. You know, it's tough to say how high they want to throw Bo Nickel, but when you get a big win like this, it's impossible to not want to give him someone really good. For Rodolfo Vieira, he's going to be fighting guys like Bosner, Tusakarev, Kyle Daugas, Jeremy Sartre, just unranked middleweights galore, but I mean, just a really, really solid win here for Bo Nickel. Really, really needed. You know, his hype train had kind of been derailed on this little three-fight streak. You know, the Cody Brundage win, clearly leagues better, couldn't get him out of there until halfway through round two. The Paul Craig fight was one of the most boring fights I've seen. And the Renier de Ritter fight just outskill everywhere. But taking out a guy in Rodolfo Vieira, defending lost takedowns, Bo Nickel stock is back at a high. With that, we headed to the main card, and there were expectations here. There were expectations for this main card, but actually witnessing it was just something else. We kick off the fight. We kick off the card. Benoit Saint-Denis. Beneil Dariush going at it. Alrighty. By the way, fight 16 seconds, all right? We're going at it. We're in front of each other. All right. Big leg kick from Beneil. Ooh, little slip from Benoit. All right. He gets up. Beneil goes to land a shot. One, two, three shots. Three shots in the clinch, right to the side of the face, and he knocks Beneil Dariush out cold. Flatlines him 16 seconds. They didn't even look like hard shots. It was really like he slips, he grabs him, he's holding on the back of his neck, just lands one, two, that third one just slumps Beneil Dariush. I mean, Benoit Saint-Denis, my boy. I love Benoit Saint-Denis. If you follow this channel, you know he's one of my favorite fighters. 0-2 in 2024, knocked down both those fights. His 2025, submits Kyle Prapalak on the UFC 315 main card. Submits Mauricio Ruffi in the co-main event of UFC Paris. Kicks off one of the biggest cards of the year, UFC 322, and knocks up Beneil Dariush in 16 seconds. From unranked to now going to be ranked number 9 in the world. Yes, Benoit Saint-Denis. I love you. I love you, Benoit Saint-Denis. 16 wins, 16 finishes, and give him another 50K performance bonus. He's a legend. He is a freaking legend. France, are you happy? You have an absolute stud here. A former champ. All right, he's going to be a former champ, dude. This is going to be amazing. I'm losing my thought process here. He's going to be a future champ is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, Benoit Saint-Denis, absolute killer. His performance has improved throughout the year. You know, guy against Kyle Prapalak, leagues better. Took him a minute to get him out of there. Round two submission there. For Mauricio Ruffi, you know, another high-level guy, you know, getting him out of there in round two. He had to grind for it. Against Beneil Dariush, clearly leagues better, clearly amazing, and he did a better job than Armin Tsarukyan and Charles Oliveira did against Beneil Dariush. And it's hilarious to think that in 2024 September, Hanam Moicano dominated Benoit Saint-Denis And in the year of 2025, Hinata Moikano was destroyed by Benil Dariush, and Benil Dariush was then destroyed by Benoit Saint-Denis. So Moikano's been leaped. Benoit Saint-Denis, I'm throwing him up at number 9, and he's now in the mix, guys. He is now in the mix. His losses to Dustin Poirier and Hinata Moikano, interesting. The Poirier one is aged like fine wine, and in terms of the Moikano one, we're going to talk about a similar situation with Carlos Prates here in just a second, but this leapfrog game of when someone beats you, but you just have a better performance or outperform them, and you jump them again, it's always funny. I mean, amazing work here for Benoit Saint-Denis, maybe one of my best comeback fighters, might may win comeback fighter of the year for 2025. Going to be ranked at number 9. Lots of options here, but Matheus Guermont at 8. I mean, Matheus just lost to none other than, what's his face, Charles Oliveira in Rio. I think that's a good option. I think the loser of Armin Tsarukyan and Dan Hooker, and then it's kind of those. It kind of really is those. You could also throw Rafael Fiziev in, but he's getting a top 10 name. I really like what I saw from here, and Benoit Saint-Denis continue to do your thing. In terms of Neil Dariush, he's probably going to be bumped down to number 10, number 11. I don't really know what to do with him. I don't really know, but he's going to be fighting someone who's on the come up, who's in need of a ranked opponent. And if anything, Benil could always retire. I mean, Benil is 36. He had his run. He had his co-main event shot against Charles Oliveira for a title shot. Ultimately, of course, did not go his way, but I'm still not giving up hope. Still not giving up hope for Benil Dariush, although his chin has looked very brutal as of late. So if I could give him anyone, maybe Grant Dawson. Grant Dawson coming off a win over Diego Ferreira. He's fighting Manuel Torres. If he beats Manuel Torres, that's a good fight. However, if Manuel Torres wins, yeah, Manuel versus Benil would be the next fight to make as well. After that, you're like, you can't top that. We've had a head kick knockout. We had a 16-second knockout. You know, nothing's stopping that. And then Carlos Prates, who started the year losing to Ian Garry, has since come back with two of the best knockouts of 2025. Round one, Leon Edwards, grappling him to death. 2 of 3 on takedowns, 3 minutes control time, just kind of hanging on him. I mean, there's this hilarious clip online of Leon Edwards, like, on his back on the fence, like, bash him in the face, and Carlos Prates just kind of has, like, this meme, just, like, blank stare. Like, just, like, what is this dude doing? Like, come on, buddy. Who do you think you are? Round two, we get going. Casual striking. Casual. I mean, these two are just going casually back and forth. Oh, little leg kick from Ian. Oh, a little shot to the gut, little shot to the jab to the face from Carlos Prates. Then Carlos Prates lands a one shot down the middle, slumps Leon Edwards flat on his back. Ref could have stepped in. And you know what Carlos Prates said? Heck no, I'm putting his lights out. Loads up while he's on the ground. Boom, shot right to the head. Leon, headshot dead, literally just like that. Leon Edwards knocked out cold by Carlos Prates. Carlos Prates, I love him. I love him. You could even say he's one of the better, more comeback fighters of the year. I mean, Carlos Prates, such a dog. 23-7 now. 2 straight wins, 2 straight performance bonuses, 2 straight knockouts. He's crazy. I've never seen a guy with such knockout ability like Carlos Prates. 18 wins now in his career by knockout, and 21 of 23 wins are by finish. So just phenomenal work from Carlos Prates here. It just doesn't get better than that. It just doesn't really. I mean, this guy lost to Ian Garry and just gassed out. Kind of like stopped, like on the big stage, had a really good, you know, like moment in the final round. But other than that, just really didn't do anything. And since then, Ian Garry hasn't fought, and Carlos Prates took 2 fights. He is now going to go from being ranked number 9 to being ranked number 4. Maybe 4 or 5 in the world. Like, you have to do that because no one's done that to Leon Edwards. Even Sean Brady took him a while to grapple him, but what Carlos Prates just did, insane. Really insane. He's got massive fights coming up next. I don't know against who, to be honest. We have another big welterweight matchup to talk about in a second. We actually have a couple to go over. So we'll sort all that out at the end of the episode. But for now, Carlos Prates is just an absolute dog. We can't talk about Leon Edwards on the other hand. Leon Edwards, his fall from grace has been steep and brutal. 3 straight losses. They've gotten progressively worse and worse. And this one was bad. Knocked out for the first time in his career. I just, oh man. I don't know what to do. He could retire. Honestly, if I'm Leon, I'm 34. I was world champion. He has nothing left to fight for. He really doesn't. If anything, I want to see a legacy fight. I want to see something fun. Because at this point, I mean, there really isn't anything. There really isn't. You know, if maybe Joaquin Buckley gets another shot up the rankings. Maybe Gabriel Bonfim gets a shot. But if I'm being honest, I think Leon Edwards should retire. If he doesn't retire, if Leon Edwards doesn't retire, they're going to have Gabriel Bonfim fight him. And I think Gabriel Bonfim, you know, handles his business. Handles his business, takes it to him. So just beware of what happens with Leon Edwards, because if he does choose to continue fighting, it's just going to get worse and worse. And that's the last thing I want in the career of Leon Edwards. I'm a good man. You know, I don't root bad on my fellow fighters at times, but oh well. I'm not even going to give them effort now. Leon Edwards, you absolutely suck. You're washed. I'm so sorry. Okay, I can just let it out. But yes, good job to Carlos Prates, one of my favorite fighters, and he gets the 50K performance bonus. So, after that, you know, Mike Morales and Sean Brady are up next. This is one of the highest level welterweight matchups of the time. We're like, okay, we are in for a, you know, three round, you know, affair. This is looking good. And then early on, you're kind of like, huh, Mike Morales actually looks really, really far ahead than Sean Brady. I don't know what's going on. And 3 minutes, 27 seconds in, he knocks out Sean Brady. He drops him with some beautiful shots. I mean, the combo to finish him was crazy. The pressure on the ground as well. And Sean Brady knocked out by Michael Morales. And, you know, I predicted it. I predicted the knockout. It's another thing to actually watch it come to fruition. Michael Morales is insane. He's 26 years old. He has 14 KOs, 15 career finishes. He is now going to go from being ranked number 8 to being ranked number 2 in the world. He's 19-0, dude. You are sleeping on Michael Morales. He is 10 fights away from tying Khabib for best record of all time. I mean, this is crazy. It really is. And this was only his 7th fight in the UFC. I mean, I don't know how he does it. He's gotten better and better. Knocked out Neil Magny in 2024. He's knocked out Gilbert Burns and Sean Brady this year. And yeah, Carlos Prates is shooting up to 4, and you're seeing Michael Morales jump him a bit up to number 2. That's right. He's going to be the number 2 fighter in the world. And you know, we're like I said, I'll talk about what we do next with the welterweight division, but it just feels like he's the number one contender, but it also feels like he's not the number one contender. I don't really know how to explain it, but this was a crazy performance. Final performance bonus of the night, 3 minutes, 27 seconds. It was the last exciting thing of the night, I might add, but Mike Morales, you are absolutely insane. I absolutely love it, and this was a career-defining win for him. As for Sean Brady, I mean, just, you know, there's levels to this. It's one thing to beat Gilbert Burns and Leon Edwards, but it's another thing to beat a fellow guy in Michael Morales. So, yeah, Sean Brady loses here. Second time in his career, he's been KO'd. This one really bad. Really, really bad. But, I mean, not too bad to an extent. He's only going to drop down maybe to 3 or 4, maybe 5 in the rankings. He's still going to be in the mix. But similar to Leon Edwards, he's no longer in the top mix. There's a few guys up there that we're going to mention once we get through the main event discussion. And in terms of what's next for Sean Brady, it's going to be someone like Joaquin Buckley, someone like Gabriel Bonfim, you know, someone in the top 10, someone in the top 5. Now, I don't know exactly who. I'd say Shavkat Rakhmonov could be a fantastic option. He really could, but I don't really know. So in terms of what's next for Sean Brady and Leon Edwards, only time will tell. Because right now, Leon Edwards definitely being cut. Or I think he should retire, not be cut. But for Sean Brady, this just kind of showed that I don't know if he's really ready for the top 5. You get glimpses of him. He'll beat Gilbert Burns. He'll beat Leon Edwards. But then he'll lose here. And you'll kind of be like, he is not really cut out for the top of the division. So, excellent win by Michael Morales. I predicted it would happen. All these KOs I predicted, which is just insane to me. It's weird. I predicted all these would be knockouts, and they were. So that makes me ever so happy. Great win. Michael Morales, you absolute beauty. And the Spider-Man lookalike, you know, Michael Morales, you know, from the comics, whatever his name is. Yeah, Michael Morales, good freaking work. We'll talk about you in a minute. And then we got into the co-main event. Could Zhang Weili become a double weight division champion? No, she could not. In case you're wondering, no, she could not. It was very bad. Very bad. All 5 rounds, all going to Valentina in just a boring fight. I mean, you know, we talk about energy sucking. You know, we have seen some very bad energy sucking this year. We've seen a lot, all right? This card, this was a doozy, okay? And here's the thing. I'm not blaming the fighters. If you've watched a Valentina Shevchenko and Zhang Weili fight, you'll just know the type of fights they fight. They're both very technical fighters, okay? And in this case, Valentina had a bit of a size advantage, and she landed 5 of 6 takedowns, and she had 13 and a half minutes of control time, and she kind of just did that every single round. Oh, round 1, And takedown. Round two, takedown. Round three, takedown. Round four, takedown. Round five, takedown. And Zhang Weili never got up. So, question is answered. I mean, if anything, this is just crazy that the math proves that Amanda Nunes is the greatest women's fighter of all time. Valentina is the number two fighter of all time. And I think it's safe to say that Zhang Weili is the number three fighter of all time. So, what will happen next year? Man, I hated to just skim over this, but no submission attempts, no big knockout attempts. If anything, it was kind of just Valentina just exercising that she is more well-rounded than Zhang Weili. So at the crazy age of 37, Valentina is still in control. She could retire today and leave the division, but this is now three straight wins. This is now 2-0 in 2025. As of right now, I think she might be my women's fighter of the year. I kid you not. No one else has really done much. So Valentina will remain atop the division. I think she has a date with the number two ranked Natalia Silva. Natalia has been working her way throughout the division. She has a 13-fight winning streak. That's the next fight you should have. Good little co-main event on a card in 2026. In terms of Zhang Weili, Mackenzie Dern is waiting for her. They haven't fought yet. That's a good another co-main event in 2026. So both divisions move on. I think it's kind of unfortunate. You know, this would have been a dream fight for everyone. Didn't really live up to, like, the legendary hype. And at the same time, it kind of showed that there is a clear discrepancy here. Zhang Weili runs the strawweights. Valentina runs the flyweights. And I don't really see that happening. But, I mean, good win for Valentina. That's all I can say. She'll remain ranked at number one pound for pound. And Zhang Weili will be ranked at number two. So Kyrgyzstan over China, it appears. Or is it Kyrgyzstan? I think it's Kyrgyzstan Shevchenko's from. We'll have to see. But, yes, good win there. And then the main event, and it didn't get any prettier. Another 50-45. Yes, Islam Akhchev is going to become the number one pound-for-pound fighter. He's a double weight division champion. He ties Anderson Silva for the longest winning streak of all time in UFC history. I mean, it's incredible. It really is incredible what he did here. You know, he's the new welterweight champion, double weight class champion in a sense. We all recognize him. And it was a cherry-picked win. Okay, here are the stats, guys. 30 significant strikes to 18, 140 total strikes to 30, 4 of 4 on takedowns. I've never seen this. 4 of 4 on takedowns, 19 minutes and 10 seconds of control time. Shout out round 2, where JDM at least kept it on the feet. But, I mean, oh, man. You know what happened in round 2, might I add, as well? JDM failed his own takedown and ended up being taken down on the ground. But round 5, easily the worst round. Islam just shot a takedown 17 seconds in. Just excruciating, really was. And, I mean, look, the pressure was impressive, but here's the thing. When Hamza Chimaev fought DDP, just his 2+C, people were clowning that fight. People were saying this is one of the worst fights ever. Hamza was trying to finish that fight. He landed over 600 total strikes. DDP had a minute left in round 5 and was still throwing, okay? Here, Islam just held him down. And I don't know whether to give Jack Maddalena credit for not being finished or what, but I don't know if it was a safe fight from Islam or what it was, but it just sucked the energy. I mean, halfway through round 5, people are leaving. You're about to watch a guy get crowned double champion. This is history in the making, and people are leaving. They really are. So, yeah, JDM will get bumped down to 1. You're kind of just going to see everyone get bumped down. I assume either Mike Mallett or Dinger Rodriguez will get bumped from the rankings, and everyone will kind of just get bumped down. And, yeah, Islam Makhachev, double weight division champion. He's going to become the new champ. JDM's now down a bit. We'll see what we do next with him. But, yeah. Yeah. Very boring fight. We don't even need to sugarcoat it. But, yeah, 4 for 4 on takedowns, 19 minutes of control time. It's unheard of. It's unseen. It's domination. So, Islam, nice little 2025, 2-0, double weight division champion. But what's next? You know, we always like to soak in the victory for a bit. But generally, what is next for welterweight? I don't know. I really don't. For all of our losers, I could see JDM and Sean Brady squaring off. I actually would love to see that. I think that's the next fight right there. I have Jack Dow, Maddalena fight Sean Brady. I believe that fight was actually supposed to happen, or wasn't supposed to happen. I don't know what was supposed to go down. But yeah, JDM versus Sean Brady kind of just writes itself. And then we kind of have this scenario here where Islam is champion. And there's this looming fight with Ito Pura, where they're both double champions. They are both double weight champions. They both feel undefeated in a sense. I know Islam technically has that one loss, but he feels undefeated. And I'm having trouble on what we do. Because if it's true that Ito Pura is going to be fighting someone first, that means you then have to have Islam fight someone. So if we do want to do Iatopuro versus Justin Gaethje, and then if we want to do Islam Makhachev versus Kamaru Usman just for the legacy, we could do that because it would feel fitting. But in terms of who deserves it, like, Michael Morales deserves it, dude. He really does. I also wonder if they're going to, you know, have Kamaru fight one of these guys. But as right now, Bilal Muhammad and Ian Garry is the final welterweight fight. That's kind of like big for 20. That is big for 2025. And after that, you will then have kind of, was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? You're gonna have like 5 or 6, you know, people we can match make. So if Ian Garry wins, he's gonna be in an interesting spot where I think Ian Garry versus Michael Morales is the next fight to make. But you also have Shavkat Rakhmonov in the mix. He's been injured for a while. He's been out a full year, so we'll see what we do next with him. So if I'm being matchmaker, alrighty. Depending on what happens, we might see Iatopuro versus Islam Makhachev next, main eventing the White House. Which, does it make sense to celebrate America by having a Georgian fighter and a Russian fighter fight in front of the White House? Not really, but I could still see it since it'll be a massive card. But I'd really like to see Iatopuro and Islam Makhachev both go out there, pick up defenses, see if they can at least get past someone other than the champions they beat, and then run it back later in the year in the biggest UFC fight of all time. So that would probably be against Kamaru Usman. I know people don't want that, but Kamaru Usman is such like a legacy name. Same with Justin Gaethje. And I'd say if we're building up a super fight, let's have each of those guys be coming in off of beating what many people view as two of the greatest for their weight classes. What do we do then next? Okay, so we have Carlos Prates, who just lost to Ian Garry. We also have Bilal Muhammad. Best case scenario is Ian Garry wins. Because if Bilal Muhammad wins, I don't really know what you do with Bilal Muhammad. I think Shavkat Rakhmonov would have a date with Bilal Muhammad. But if Ian Garry wins, Ian Garry probably has a date with Michael Morales, which is a fight I just don't want him. If I'm Ian Garry, I do not want that fight. And I know he was clowning the welterweight division. Like, he was clowning, I think it was Leon Edwards and Sean Brady. I'm like, dude, these guys would smoke you. Like, Carlos Prates at a rematch. I'm taking him over Ian Garry any day of the week. So, lots of stuff to see. The updated rankings are probably going to be Islam Makhachev, obviously champion. JDM at 1. Bilal Muhammad at 2. I think you're putting Michael Morales at 3. Shavkat Rakhmonov at 4. Usman at 5. I don't know what you do here. Garry at 6? Because Carlos Prates only moved up like 2 slots. There's a lot to be seen. So when we do our UFC Qatar, which I'll mention in a second, is the next big card for the UFC coming up next weekend. On the next episode, we'll also look at the updated rankings and see where everyone's at. But yeah, amazing card. That 4 streak knockouts make it one of the best cards of the year. Sadly, the main event and co-main event were just too one-sided and too technical to be of any excitement. I mean, through the 50 minutes that we watched the main event, co-main event of actual fight time, you know, 25 minutes one fight, 25 minutes another, over 30 minutes were grappling, control time by one fighter, which is just not exciting. Also, both fights 5-0, shutouts each round, so kind of interesting. I'm hoping for this upcoming UFC Qatar card we don't see many one-sided fights. But yeah, UFC 322, we'll recap it at the end of the year again in terms of ranking it. But overall, it was a big success. And the 4 biggest stars coming out of this, Bo Nickel, Benoit Saint-Denis, Michael Morales, and Carlos Prates, those 4 have staked their claim as 4 of the best in the UFC. But yeah, we're going from Vegas over to Qatar, Doha, Qatar. It is the main event, co-main event combo here. Armin Tsarukyan versus Dan Hooker and Bilal Muhammad versus Ian Machado Garry. Massive implications for both of their divisions. I mean, absolutely massive. And this card is also loaded everywhere else you look. Volkan Ozdemir and Alonzo Menafield. Great matchup there. Jack Hermanson moving down to welterweight to take on Mike Tabek Orobai. I mean, what? Top 10 heavyweight action, Shamil Gaziev and Sergey Spivak. Top 10 flyweight action, Alex Perez and Asyl Mabayev. The debut of Luke Riley coming over from Cage Warriors to take on Bogdan Grodd. Amazing. The debut of Season 9, Dana White's Contender Series fighter, Abdulrahman Yakyaev, who had a 31-second knockout. Kyoichi Horiguchi returns to the UFC after a trip around the world. 9 years later, he takes on top 15 flyweight Tagir Ulanbekov. Behzad Almakhan and Alexander Topuria is going to be one of the highest-level bantamweight fights you've ever seen. Only man to beat Behzad, Umar Nurmagomedov, Alexander Topuria. Yeah, he's the older brother of Iatopuro. Also, I have a couple other bangers on the bottom of the card. Shamrock joins the UFC to take on Nurullo Aliyev. Saeed Izgakmaev debuts against Nicholas Dalby, and you get a little heavyweight debuts of Denzel Freeman and Mariq Bucho. It's going to be fantastic. Now, the sad part, ladies and gentlemen, the very sad part, I will be working when this card goes on. That's right, international card, not going to be able to watch, which is kind of heartbreaking. It really is, especially with how good it looks. I mean, this is looking to be a fantastic, just a fantastic card, and I just don't know if I'm going to be around or able to watch it. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if I'm able to maybe sneak it on my phone or something. But yeah, going to be a banger card. And after that, you know, there's only two more events. December has two more events, and then we're done with the UFC. It's actually kind of funny. When the UFC ends, my work ends. So it's like, oh, I'm finally done with work. I can enjoy my Saturday UFCs. Yeah, no, not going to be the case. But UFC 323 is shaping up to be a banger as well. Of course, Merab and Pierre Jan, Alexander Pantoa versus Joshua Van. Other main card and prelim fights that you got on here, Jan Blachowicz versus Bogdan Guskov, Brandon Moreno versus Tatsuro Taira, Nazim Sadikov versus Ferzayam, Henry Cejudo versus Peyton Dalton. I mean, I'm just going to stop myself here because I'm going to list off the entire card. But yeah, banger matchups left, right, and center. And yeah, good card overall for UFC 322. So let me know what you guys thought of UFC 322. Let me know what you guys are thinking about the fighting world overall. I mean, my championship predictions are all over the place. I guess I now have to account for double championship opportunities, but there isn't really going to be any coming up, if I'm being honest. I could think Alex Pereira moving up to heavyweight would be an option, but with the whole fiasco in the heavyweight division, that's not looking possible. I could also see Hamza Chimaev eventually moving up, but he has some business to handle at middleweight. And yeah, featherweight, bantamweight, flyweight, all kind of just locked in. Kind of locked in where they're at. So we'll leave that there. Good fight week overall. And my work week continues. You know, it's 9 p.m. I have to go to bed in like 50 to 60 minutes, which is okay. You know what? I used to be sad I didn't have a job. And now that I have a job, the last thing I'm going to do is be ungrateful because I'm so grateful. So praise God for that. Thank you so much. And without further ado, guys, I'll send you off. Make it the best week ever. All right, we'll be back. UFC guitar predictions. Guess I'll go over the NFL. NFL's kind of kicking my ass right now. I can't lie. The NFL's kind of pissing me off. I try to just stay away from it just because fantasy football annoys me. But, yeah, have a good one. And then you already know what I'm going to say. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jeb Podcast.